the dirt. And for all the little piggies, life is getting worse. Always having dirt to play. Starched white shed, you will find bigger piggies stirring up the dirt. Always have clean sheds to play around in. In the skies with all the packing, they don't care what goes on around. In life there's something lacking, what they
forks and knives to eat the bacon. Thanks for returning to Great Speeches and Interviews on Access Sacramento and The Voice. I'm Steve Lerman. If you're just catching up with this program, we're listening to Michelle Alexander explain how the Get On Tough crime policies that were enacted in the 1970s were an effort to push back at the gains of the civil rights movement. And next week on Great Speeches and Interviews, Tom Friedman lays out why a carbon tax could save America.
Hey, how you doing?
Hi.
My name is Marie Farnan. I want to thank you for coming. And one of my questions, well, my question is, for a student or anybody else out here in the crowd who wants to get more involved actively in the progression of this movement, what can we do other than informing other people of what's actually going on and doing more research ourselves? What can I do to get active in that movement?
Excellent question. One thing you can do is think about forming a Students Against Mass Incarceration organization on campus. These groups have been forming on numerous college campuses and universities around the country. And, you know, there's one at Howard, there's one at Columbia, they're growing. And in fact, you can go on my website, which is newjimcrow.com, and get contact information about who to contact about kind of joining that effort and linking up with other student groups around the country who are wrestling with exactly the same question of how can young people begin to play a meaningful role and take some leadership in building the movement to end mass incarceration. And on the website, I also list a bunch of resources and organizations that you consider contacting, you know, that you can begin to work with if you choose and if they are doing work here locally. But I really do think that the priorities are, you know, consciousness raising, working towards, you know, supporting people as they are released from prison, so finding out in your community what are the reentry centers, you know, what forms of support can be provided, and then also getting to work with organizations like the Drug Policy Alliance and, you know, many other organizations that are operating nationally to repeal harsh drug laws that exist, you know, here in this state, like other states, to get involved in ban the box initiatives, repeal, you know, bans on food stamps. All of the types of things I described, there are people undoubtedly who have already begun some of that work locally, and if they haven't, to really think seriously about forming your own organization. One of the things that worries me most about, you know, this point that we are in building the movement is that there really is no grassroots organization that exists today on a national level that has as its primary mission ending the system of mass incarceration. And so some of the work that needs to be done may not have begun in your community. But who is going to do this work if not you, if not us? So we've got to begin somewhere. And so I encourage you to check out my website for a list of organizations and resources. Think about forming your own student organization here. And then also get together with like-minded souls and think seriously about what kinds of organizations need to be built, perhaps, you know, in your own community to do the work that lies ahead. So thank you for your question.
Thank you.
Yes, I would just like to thank you for your presentation. It was very insightful. The question I would like to ask you is that, overall, typically when many young persons are arrested for drugs, they tend to level a lot of charges against them. One such charge, which is very difficult to beat, is conspiracy. Mm-hmm. Conspiracy to yes. sell drugs. And a barber of mine in Jamaica who was deported told me that conspiracy is one of the hardest charges to beat. What sort of solutions do you propose to sort of, I don't know if to remove such a charge from the book, because conspiracy can be applied in such a broad way.
Thank you so much for raising that question. And, you know, many people don't realize until you're charged as being part of a conspiracy that something as simple as passing messages to someone. Oh, so-and-so called. He wants you to meet him there. Oh, you need a ride? Okay, I'll give you a lift. And you may have some vague sense of what's going on, or maybe you don't really know what's going on, but the prosecution sure thinks you do. And it takes one overt act in support of the conspiracy, and an overt act could be giving someone a ride. It can be passing messages. It can be something extremely minor. And many women find themselves charged as co-conspirators because the prosecutors are really after their boyfriend or their husband or some man that they know who they think is involved in drug conspiracy. And so they will charge them as a co-conspirator in order to try to get them to snitch on their friend or loved one. And unfortunately, many women who either don't actually have the knowledge to be able to snitch, or because of their own conscience won't allow themselves to snitch on someone they care about, find themselves doing far more time than the person who is charged as the principal in the crime. So these conspiracy laws are very dangerous and unjust and ought to be changed. And conspiracy laws, just like drug laws themselves, can be changed. It requires a demand. It requires organization. It requires us to become educated about the nature of these laws and insist that legislators do what it takes to ensure that people are not ensnared by them in the ways that you described.
Thank you.
Sorry, folks, we only have time for like three more questions, so we'll take the first question starting here and then go back and forth.
Hello, I'm Demetrius Richmond. Thank you for coming.
Thank you.
I think your message needs to continue to spread, but I would be remiss if I did not talk about my cognitive dissonance surrounding this topic. As I was sitting there, it was just so much going through my mind, and I had a lot of internal conflict. And so I guess I'm thinking about this. This possibly should be an internal Black community discussion, but there's still this notion of personal accountability that I'm thinking about. And I guess my question is, does that play a role in this mass incarceration movement? Because I have a lot of family members and friends who know better and continue to not do better and make bad decisions and don't hold themselves accountable. Yes. And so part of me is still struggling with how do we balance the act of the external things versus the internal. So does personal accountability play a role in this? And how do we really deal with that, with this movement?
Excellent question. And, you know, I think personal accountability plays a role in it for all of us. You know, we all have to take responsibility for the choices that we make in our lives. But we also have to take responsibility for the choices we make collectively. And it seems to me that we have been willing to heap an enormous amount of shame and blame on the poorest, the most vulnerable in our society, and accept no responsibility collectively for having set people up to fail and then keeping them trapped. So, yes, of course, everyone has got to take responsibility for their own actions. There is absolutely a role for personal accountability in the conversation. But I think we've got to expand the conversation beyond personal accountability and ask the question, okay, so you've made a mistake, now what? And the reality is that people of all colors make mistakes. And in fact, we make many of the same kinds of mistakes. But some people are punished so harshly and in an unrelenting fashion. And some people who make the same mistakes, like President Barack Obama, go off to college, go on to law school, and get to be president of the United States, right? So I think we've really got to be willing to look at the kinds of mistakes people make with an open heart, an open mind, and make choices about how we respond to those mistakes in a way that honors their humanity, their dignity, and is based in awareness that, yes, as a society, we need to be safe. We need to honor people's basic human rights to be able to live in a community that is safe and secure. You know, a child growing up in a crime-ridden, violent community who has to worry about, you know, bullets flying through the air near her school, her human rights are being violated because we have not provided her a safe, secure environment in which she can live and grow. So we've got to hold each of us individually accountable and do so in a way that honors each other's basic humanity and basic human rights, assures that we create safe and thriving communities, caring communities, but we can't simply resort to shame and blame and get caught up in a wave of punitiveness that makes us less safe and ultimately denies the basic humanity of those we claim to care about. Thanks.
Thank you. My name is James Lewis, and I'd like to just thank you for bringing this presentation to this area of the country. I think it needs it more than most of the areas, especially here in this area. But I have a concern, and I really like your approach that you've taken to this. It's like a root cause analysis of what has caused the massive incarceration of so many African Americans, and that you've used data and statistics to lay out. My question has to do with, where is the African American churches when it comes to getting involved? What has happened to them? We seem to run from data. We seem to run from root cause analysis. We seem to just become so lackadaisical in this area. What would you recommend to the churches and to the church leaders as what we should be doing to address this issue?
Yes, thank you. I agree that people of faith and conscience have such an extraordinarily important role to play at this moment in our nation's history, at a time when so many people of faith, including myself, you know, we claim to care a lot about compassion and forgiveness. We talk a good game, you know, but then when it comes to being willing to stand up against these kinds of injustices, for too long, too many people of faith and conscience have remained silent. I am encouraged, though, in, you know, recent years, faith leaders are waking up and standing up. The Samuel DeWitt Proctor Conference, which is a network of several thousand progressive black churches, has actually decided to make ending mass incarceration one of their primary missions, you know, for the foreseeable future. And they actually created a faith-based study guide for my book to be used in congregations to raise awareness and to encourage people to explore the relationship between their faith and their spiritual commitments and what we see in this era of mass incarceration, and to encourage people to find their prophetic voice in this time of crisis. And so there is movement afoot within faith communities. PICO is a multiracial, multi-ethnic, you know, faith-based social justice organizing network that is now embracing ending mass incarceration as one of their main goals. So there is change in shifting attitudes to be seen within the faith community, but I couldn't agree with you more that much, much, much more work needs to be done. And ultimately, you know, being the world's leader in imprisonment, locking people up and subjecting them to a permanent second-class status, if that is not a moral issue, a spiritual crisis to which the church ought to speak and respond, I don't know what is. And so I hope that people like you will encourage, you know, the faith leaders, you know, who you know and in your circles of influence to begin to speak up and speak out with some courage.
Thank you.
Thank you.
This will be the last question.
Okay.
Hello, my name is Jalen Tarvin, and I heard, my question was similar to Marifa's, and I understand how you said, like, bringing organizations into colleges might help, but I feel like the most powerful thing right now is the media, and, like, how do we get, like, you don't really see too many black leaders teaming up together to help young black people find the truth. And I feel like we're struggling to find the truth because there's so much other things going on in the media. And I just wonder how you feel. How can we help that?
Yes, that is an excellent point. I mean, you know, truly, if you are to watch mainstream news or mainstream media today, you are not going to learn anything useful about the system of mass incarceration or really any of the other pressing social justice issues of our time. And so, I think it is important for people to become very creative about educating their communities. And I think the internet and social networking provides real opportunities to subvert the dominant messages that we receive from the mainstream media and to circulate videos and articles and materials online to as many people as possible. But there's also no substitute for coming together in person. Posting to Facebook is great, but coming together in person to have study circles, to have film screenings, to have forums where these issues are discussed and debated are essential, I think, to raising kind of the level of awareness and consciousness and building, you know, a common commitment to taking, you know, constructive action. So I hope you will be among those who think creatively about new forms of media that can reach people. It is my great hope and prayer that we will see out of Hollywood one day a movie that depicts the struggle of a young man or a young woman coming out of prison and the challenges they face and the heroic efforts they make to survive on the outside that tells a different story than the one that we have been fed for so long about the criminals and what ought to be done with them. But, you know, in the meantime, we have to take responsibility for educating ourselves and our own communities using the means we have at our disposal. Thank you.
Thank you.
You can listen to great speeches and interviews on accesssacramento.org, or you can go to greatspeechesandinterviews.blogspot.com.
Show me a prison, show me a jail, show me a prison man whose face is growing pale. And I'll show you a young man with many reasons why. And there but for fortune may go you or I. Show me an alley, show me a train, show me a hobo who sleeps out in the rain. And I'll show you a young man with many reasons why. And there but for fortune may go you or I. Show me the whiskey that stains on the floor. Show me a drunken man as he stumbles out the door. And I'll show you a young man with many reasons why. And there but for fortune may go you or I. Show me a country where the bombs had to fall. Show me the ruins of the buildings once so tall. And I'll show you a young land with so many reasons why. And there but for fortune may go you or I, or I.
On a window. The leaves blow across the long black road to the darkened sky in its rain.
Oh, say can we see by the one light in all our earth to embrace at the call of all nations where our children can play in a world without war, where we stand hand in hand in the grace of creation, where the rivers run clean through the forests of green, where the cities stand tall in the clear skies of freedom. Oh, say do our hearts sing out for harmony and love forever on the planet of our birth, blessed with on earth.
That's all, folks.